Hi, I'm Jeff Prescott.
And I'm Mike McGinnis.
And you're listening to No Quarter, a quasi-weekly podcast about classic arcade video games.
I think it's a podcast that's aware of weeks, but doesn't stick to them necessarily.
It'll come around.
Yeah. How have you been?
Good. Tired, but good.
Oh, tired just in general, or because it's fall, or...
I think the lack of sunlight probably has something to do with it. There's probably a little blue creeping in, maybe.
And do they take the sun away from you over there on the East Coast?
They do. It shrinks. it's dark around 6 o'clock in the evening now. And November 1st, we lose another hour, and that'll be devastating. I hate winter. Hate it.
Well, I can think of no better time than to stay inside and play video games.
Yeah, it has its upshots. This is definitely a benefit, an ancillary benefit to bad weather. It's been rainy and dark, so yeah, let's play some MAME.
That's true. Yeah, now that we have MAME, we don't even have to, we're not limited to whatever game cabinet we happen to have. You know, we've got the whole library of games available to us. And this week we're talking about, definitely an older one than last week. We went and played some, I think it was that fantasy sword swinging elves and fairies game that we actually had a lot of fun with, whose name I can't remember at the moment.
Legend of Mekhi.
Oh, that's right. And now we're jumping back to 1980 to Sega Gremlin. And Carnival, and I think this was your idea, wasn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, it's on me.
Okay, well, you picked it, so start us off.
I chose Carnival primarily because I have a little bit of familiarity with it. I saw it on the list and it jumped out at me. I've always kind of liked the meta kind of appeal of this type game. If you think about it, it's kind of a little love letter or maybe an homage, like an early video homage to what the arcade used to be and symbolize. It's kind of a distilled, compressed, digitized version of a shooting gallery. An experience that probably a lot of pinball playing and electromechanical type people of the early arcade patrons might have been able to identify with. And I think that Gremlin executed this really well to give you an experience of, you know, shoot the bear and collect the points, and no stuffed animal to give to your girlfriend, but not too bad overall. It's cute.
And for a game that came out in 1980, it's surprisingly deep. There's quite a lot. There's quite a lot to it, and especially for what feels initially like it's a carnival shooting gallery game, but it's also Space Invaders, if you think about it, because the things move back and forth and they come down at you and you shoot up at them as you move back and forth. But it's because it's a carnival setting, it comes off as not feeling like just another space blaster, which is really nice.
Yeah, it's abandoned, I guess, what was really crowding the arcades by 79, 80, you know, shooting space-themed games. It does have that same delightful problem that Space Invaders has with the anxiety of your game can just suddenly end. You don't get lives, per se. You just get an X amount of ammunition, which you can replenish and deplete, and suddenly it can all be gone, and it can just end.
Yeah, which actually, if you think about it, is how it would be if you played this, at a real carnival or a circus sideshow, you know, down the arcade aisle, something like that. You run out of bullets and your turn is up. And like you said, no giant stuffed rabbit at the end, but still a lot of fun. I found myself constantly being reminded of the Spectrum, the ZX Spectrum computer, just because of the weird combination of that certain shade of yellow with that certain shade of green with that certain shade of blue that I always associate with that home computer for some reason.
Yes, those retina scarring colors of familiar to the ZX Spectrum crowd. Yeah, definitely.
Yep, that's the one. Definitely. That's the one.
And the plinky little I hope you got my email earlier. I'd sent you a file. The game isn't emulated correctly quite yet fully in MAME, and there were sound samples that were required to actually play it, which I think in this day and age is actually kind of neat, considering they haven't successfully emulated all of the machinations of a 1978 technology-based audio chip. did you get those?
I did, but I have a complete set of MAME files, so I've got all the samples. But it is an interesting point to discuss. We've talked about in the past on the show about especially like Donkey Kong, which used to use the sample files, and the sample files are recordings of the sound itself rather than the code that generates the sound. And when they switched over, they finally figured out how to emulate the actual sound of Donkey Kong as it's being generated rather than what you're hearing. And the sound in MAME got quite a bit worse because now it sounds kind of muffled and warbled. And so there are a lot of people I know that when they play Donkey Kong in MAME, they actually load up an older version of MAME with the old ROMs so that they can get the better sound, because sometimes, what MAME goes for is perfect emulation, and sometimes perfect emulation is actually worse than if you're doing workarounds to make it play better, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I tend to err on the originality presentation too. I remember playing Donkey Kong in the arcade, and it was kind of low-key and warbly and a little guttural, and it was more of a bassy kind of noise, and there wasn't a high lot of mid-range or high-level kind of tonality to it, and the sound file versus the pure emulation, I would side on the pure emulation.
Okay.
It's just a little more. And like Carnival too, I can barely remember ever seeing this game. I might have played it one or two times at, age 6 or 7. But I think it, in terms of reminiscing, sounds a lot like I remember it. With the exception of the bear didn't really growl quite the way I recalled. And when your bullets are counted at the end of the stage, there's a nice little dulcet kind of melody that plays that I didn't even hear on my computer. So I don't know if that's a limitation or what.
It's possible. Like you said, the game is not perfectly emulated yet. So things like that, the stuff, the little things that you remember and you're not seeing, for me, when I come across that in my head, I have to stop and think, now, am I just remembering something that wasn't there to begin with, or is there something that is actually supposed to be there? And a lot of times it's supposed to be there and it's not, or it's wrong because they haven't figured it out yet. Now, this game in particular has a very interesting and complex scoring system. And Jeff, I think you probably have a better handle on this than I do. I had never seen or played this game before this week. So I'm going to let you talk about the scores now.
Okay. I'm going to crib from my notes here heavily.
Okay.
Bear with me.
That's fine.
So, brief gameplay description. This is a one or two player alternating shooting game simulating a carnival shooting gallery. There are three rows of targets consisting of owls, rabbits, and ducks, which all descend in point value. The highest row is going to be a larger valuation. The middle row, slightly lower, and the row lowest and closest to your rifle is actually the least point worthy. I guess that's commensurate with the level of difficulty of hitting the targets. The targets float left to right, and right to left, and left to right, like alternating on the rows. And they repeat. They're on kind of like a loop until they're shot. There's a rotating pipe wheel consisting of 8 pipes in 4 pairs of colors, white, yellow, red, and teal. There's a bonus section where you can literally spell out the word B-O-N-U-S to receive a bonus point value. The little multiplier starts out at an X value and increases every stage you survive. And continues to increase with every target that you hit until you hit the B to begin start spelling bonus. At that point, the value is fixed. And if you're able to hit the onus, O-N-U-S, to complete the bonus, you'll be awarded that point value. If you hit any of the letters out of sequence, it'll just disappear. And I don't think the letters are actually worth anything in themselves. Let's see, the pipes. Interestingly, every shot a player takes decreases the original bonus valuation afforded to the pipes. So the longer you wait to start shooting them, the lower evaluation they will be, and their valuation changes stage to stage as well. So the pipes are worth more points ostensibly early in the round, but they're more difficult to hit because there's a lot more targets in your way. However, you can make up for this in a hurry if you shoot the pipes in colored matched pairs on consecutive shots. So for example, if you fired on your third shot and hit a red pipe, and then fired on your fourth shot and hit the other red pipe, you'd get four times the valuation of the bonus multiplier, which can help your score out in a hurry. Although that's hard to do. The timing is unique and stuff gets in the way.
My head is spinning already.
I know, it's pretty nutty. Let's see. The animals on the rows, like on stage one, I think are, 70, 50, and 30. And that just increases round for round. A duck in flight scores no points. A maximum of three ducks at one time can fly toward you. A duck will activate in the lowest rung of the board and fly toward your ammunition hall. And once it reaches your magazine, it will eat 10 of your bullets. You want to obviously prioritize flying ducks. There are two targets, a 10 and a 5, which are rounds of ammunition that you can acquire if you shoot them. They only traverse through the first two levels of the shooting gallery. They don't make it to the bottom rung. They disappear. Let's see, what else am I forgetting? There's a bonus round.
It's the first game with a bonus round, right?
I think it's one of the earliest. I couldn't actually ascertain if it was the very first game to have a bonus round. There were a couple of other titles that were credited in 1980 with that using that mechanic as well. Their names escape me at the moment. Additional bullets remaining at the end of your round are 50 points apiece. They're some of the most expensive things you can have in the game. So you want to try and conserve ammunition, obviously, to preserve your life, the one life that you have to live. You can't shoot multiple times. Only one shot at any given time can be on screen. Let's see. And the bonus round, the bear rack. Once you've completed shooting all of the targets successfully and you have ammunition left over, you're treated to a free stage. The bonus initially is your rifle with unlimited ammunition and a target bear, which moves from right to left and will alter its direction and increase speed every time you successfully hit the giant bullseye that's in the center of the bear. And it should growl and animate and switch direction. Eventually it'll speed up and it'll be able to escape the hail of bullets coming its way, and you'll proceed on to the next round, and point values will increase. As will speed, and your ammunition will decrease precipitously. The difficulty in this game is punishing.
Yeah, it builds up pretty quickly. I never did well at it. I had a lot of fun playing, but I just sort of shot stuff, and that was enough for me with a game like this. And because the sound, especially, the game came out in 1980 and the graphics are comparatively rudimentary, but the sound is great. You got the little carnival tune playing in the background and the little bang and then the ting of the target as you hit it all sounded pretty authentic to a real shooting gallery type game, and I really enjoyed that. It's the little stuff like that, especially with early games, that, you know, it's the little details that really draw you in and make you want to keep coming back and playing it, and especially the difficulty, you know, the feeling that this is a difficult game, but if I invest some time and some effort, I can get better at it. There are games that we've talked about where they're so difficult when you're playing them that it's just an exercise in frustration, and you end up feeling like you're never ever going to get better, and those just aren't really much fun to play, and this is not a game like that at all.
No, it's definitely a one more time or let's go again. You always feel at the end of the conclusion of the game that you could do better on the next round, so you're encouraged to, you know, keep dropping that quarter or hitting that credit button, and it's over so fast. It's my average game lasted about 4 minutes, and I guess you want to hit the shiny red button over and over and over again, right, to keep playing it. I did find the waltz music itself is actually borrowed, I guess. It's adapted from a waltz called Sobre las Olas, mm-hmm, or Over the Waves, by Mexican composer Juvenito Rosas, who died very late in the 19th century.
Yeah, that seemed to be that's another hallmark of an early game, especially before the companies really had millions of dollars to throw at licensing popular song titles and top 40 hits, was to take public domain stuff and things that were no longer protected by copyright and adapting them to their games. And in this case, it works out really well. Some games are not always as effective, but I think it worked pretty well in the case of Carnival.
Yeah, it's got that perfect little atmospheric kind of calliope, genteel, old world kind
plinky,
of.
Plinky, plinky.
Yeah, for sure. And that coupled and contrasting with, you know, the shot noises and the plink, plink. I mean, anyone who's ever been to the Midway and, you know, tried to shoot one of the, you know, targets with the rifle will instantly be transported there by the little metallic binks and plinks and punks that are evident here.
Now, some games, especially when they're trying to duplicate or present an experience that's based on a game that already exists in the real world, you kind of wonder, well, what's the point of that if all I'm doing is seeing the same thing on the screen that I could be getting elsewhere? You know, for me, those tend to be like golf games. You know, why am I playing or a bowling game? Why am I doing this in a game, in an arcade, a virtual setting, when if that experience isn't giving me anything that I can't get by going and actually bowling with my friends, or I'm not a golf player, but that sort of thing. And fortunately, you know, there's enough added here to the experience, you know, the ducks flying down at you and the bonus rounds and things, that it feels like, okay, I understand why they did this, and yet it's not so much that it overcomes and overpowers the original spirit of the game that you're playing, which is shooting gallery.
Right. It's I see what you're saying. It kind of falls into the genre of emulated sport, but it's such a non-traditional kind of sporty kind of game. I mean, it's just a quick game of skill. You know, it's not taxing. It's immediately accessible. You know, the objective is obvious right out of the gate. However, you know, there's all this depth to, you know, the scoring and bonusing, but it's a real simple premise.
Yeah, but what's nice is that if you want to invest the time and the effort to learn the scoring system, You know, it, I think it pays off because you can really rack up the bonuses and run your score up if you know what you're doing, but you don't have to know the ins and outs of that scoring system to have a good time playing it or to get further into the game. Sometimes games require you to figure out scoring systems and bonuses and power-ups, and it becomes you become bogged down in trying to nail down the details and lose sight of having fun, and it just becomes a sort of a slog through technical details, and this doesn't get caught up in that. It's still a for all of its sophistication around, you know, the points, it's still about a simple game and having a good time, and I like it. I had a fun time.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I'd liked it in the past, and it was a nice little nostalgic kind of trip. It's still fun 20 years later. it aged pretty well, and I guess not everything from 1980 aged all that great.
Well, and it certainly does have some of the hallmarks of a 1979 era game. You know, like I said, that's kind of a crude, rudimentary system. You know, you got those ugly colors, and there's not really a background. It's just black. You know?
Yeah, they couldn't be any more Blade Runner-tastic, really, yeah. Honestly. Yeah, they look like replicant owls or something. It's so two-dimensionally flat that, wow. Like a Roman tile or something.
Right, exactly. And there's no... you know, the scores are basically permanently fixed to the top, you know, eighth or so, or fifth or so of the screen. They never, as you're playing, they're, you know, that's where they are. And when the game's over, the scores are still up in that area, and they count the scores. You're not getting tens of thousands of points and hundreds of thousands and million point bonuses, which is another way you can tell that this is an 80 era game, circa 1980 game, because the points aren't, you know, you're getting 10, 20, 100 points at the most. And that tends to be a way that you can tell that, yes, this is an early game before they realize that people want millions and millions of points. But for all of its crude charm, it is exactly that. It's charming, and it's not one that I'm going to seek out a whole lot. But if I'm bored and I want a quick arcade game, and I remember it, I'll play it. You know, if I happen to see this in an arcade somewhere, I'll definitely drop a quarter or two. But I'm not going to burn through a $20 bill, I don't think.
No, it's after about three or four plays, I think that there's a law of diminishing return, and you just don't get that same kind of treatment.
It is a bit repetitive, yeah.
A little. There's a little burst of creativity, like when you mentioned the bonuses, and I completely neglected this earlier, but there's a special bonus yellow target box that illuminates and goes dark kind of randomly, with like bonus point awards, actual figure like +750 or +500 or +200. And sometimes it includes bullets for ammunition. And it's important to pay attention to the function sign in front of those values, because sometimes it's positive and sometimes it's negative.
Sometimes it's, you lose a lot of bullets.
A stray bullet could actually wipe you out of 20 rounds of ammunition or 800 points and just kind of be devastating to your game. Anything that's a positive value quickly depletes. It can be a little frustrating that way, because you have this narrow little window where you have to take out pipes, and I tend to stay on the left of the median of the screen so I can slot over and take shots at the little, you know, target bonus area to, especially, you know, round two or round three, God forbid, if you can actually go further than that. But you're actually dependent upon accruing bonuses and hitting those little 10 and 5 value targets, because you're not even given enough ammunition at the beginning of the game to complete a round. You have to scratch for it.
Yeah, that was a little frustrating for me at first until I figured that out, because I kept running out of rounds before I could advance, and I knew that, you know, I'd read enough to know that the game ends when you run out of rounds, but I couldn't figure out even like very careful conservation how to get through it until I figured out that, you know, the bonus thing and that you have to get those extra bullets. And I like that the game rewards you for paying attention. You know, you can drop a quarter and just sort of move left and right and bang and shoot everything that moves, but you're really not going to do well unless you pay attention and focus on what you're doing. Again, but it's difficult because it's fast and it speeds up and you're limited on your rounds, but you never feel like, I'm never going to get any better at this.
This probably crossed your mind as well. And I was thinking at, you know, the end of round one, why don't I just exploit this and wait for the tens to kind of slot over and shoot ducks and amass some points and kind of forestall going to that second round that's mm-hmm. so much harder and just eat points. And I attempted to do that and I realized it's impossible. And then I had a look at the arcade manual and figured out why. from the manual, quote, a doomsday counter in the code triggers a massive duck generation once a certain time threshold is met the same time each round, preventing the skilled player from exploiting, accumulating ammunition, and artificially, you know, perpetuating that round. This automatically sent me back to, you know, images of Peter Sellers and Dr. Strangelove by the Doomsday counter. And now I've got a really weird free association with this game and cream pies, but that's a different topic.
I kept thinking of Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds every time.
Nice. Nice. Now, did you notice when the ducks are coming down on you too, there's actually three different animated duck noises. They up to three ducks can attack you simultaneously and they all have a different voice. They quack a little differently, or the flapping sound is the timbre is a little different, or the key's a little different, and there's three different distinct noises for the duck. I thought that was, you know, a pretty nice touch for obviously pretty limited hardware.
Yeah, a lot of, I think, care and attention to detail went into the game design here, and it really paid off. It all comes together pretty well. One of the reasons that the sound is so good is, in fact, because we'll talk about the hardware now, is because it uses a custom soundboard. The game is based on Sega's Vic Dual platform, which was an arcade system that Sega introduced in 1977 and then upgraded in 1979. This version features a Zilog Z80 at 1.934 megahertz. The custom soundboard, it's RGB colors, which is kind of why it looks like that. You can have, up to 64 colors on the screen at any given time. I'm sorry, 8 colors on the screen at any given time. And the display resolution is 328 by 262. Now, did you look at all at the cabinets when you were researching the game this week?
I did. I found some pretty pictures from the net. Although, one caveat, the game is purported to have been produced in a cocktail, but I couldn't find any images of a bona fide carnival cocktail. I did see some older documentation on the web that was relevant to, you know, their patent approval process at Gremlin for, you know, the build design. It looks like it may have had an oval top and been sitting on those. Yeah, where, you know, two players definitely sat across from each other, but it was ovoid and, you know, the faux wood grain kind of box base and not a lot of, you know, decal or anything, but... Yeah, the upright is kind of a large, imposing-looking cabinet with an animated bezel with depicting creatures from the game, the rabbits and owls and rabbits. The marquee is a really nice, pretty decorative font featuring the infamous bear target, I think, which is growling and hiding behind one of the letters menacing you. There's a little cardboard surround above the bezel and, you know, in, at depth inside the cabinet, which is kind of reminiscent of Asteroids, the, you know, the cardboard surround hiding behind that plexiglass, which has like cartoonish looking critters that are, you know, are hanging like the prizes that you would, you know, in a real Midway have access to if your score warranted it. It's an attractive looking cabinet. It definitely had an appeal to it. Mostly orange and red and kind of bright skittly colors. Somewhat muted, maybe not, you know, tasting the rainbow there, but it's an attractive looking cab. I wish I could have found some images of the cocktail. If anyone's got any out there, or if anyone owns one, please submit. I'd love to
see and hear about that.
Yeah, I did read about the cocktail, and it's a little unique in and of like a two-player game. Once one player completes a round, their game is halted. The screen flips, and player two is, you know, triggered to complete the round, and then it will swap again, and you never get too far away from your opponent. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's very cool. Now, the uprights, are these expensive? Is this something I'm looking at paying $1,500 to get a hold of one of these? Are they common? Do you know?
They're relatively uncommon. You'd have about as much time finding one of these as you would like a Vanguard or something. And they're in the $400 to $800 range if they're complete.
Okay, that's kind of pricey.
Yeah, it's up there, but it's not insane money. I couldn't find any examples of one being traded or sold here within the past 2 years.
Interesting. Well, fortunately, like I said, it's based on that duel, the Vic Duel system. So there are other games that were produced on that system. There's one called Depth Charge. Frogs is a popular game, I think. Something called Hayenko Alien, a game called Head On, and one called Samurai. So I wonder if it would be a simple matter to convert one of those into a carnival if you wanted to.
I would imagine the hardware is probably interchangeable. You know, from what I've been able to ascertain, you know, Gremlin in its early stages, you know, what didn't have extremely deep pockets. So you think that they probably would have engineered their hardware in such a way that it could have been plug and play. But I'm not sure.
Okay. I'm looking at a copy of the manual for this that was produced by, looks like Gremlin produced it. And they are listing for, in the packing instructions page, there are three different versions of the game listed here. There's the arcade version, there's one called the mini video version, and then there's a cocktail. And the cocktail measures 22 inches wide by 34 inches long by 24 and a half inches high, whereas the mini video is 22 inches high, 21 inches wide, and 20 inches deep, and then the standard arcade stand-up.
That's sweet. There's a cabaret version as well, then. Yep, like the mini upright. Okay. Wow.
Well, now, just because the instruction that just because it shows up in the instructions doesn't mean that they were actually produced or sold. You know, it could have been that they were planning to and didn't have the money, or they figured out it's not going to be popular and they didn't do it. So I'm not sure.
True. I did find a fantastic resource that I think we should include in the show notes and we should recognize here in our forum, a blog which is published and active and very recent from a gentleman called Keith Smith, called the Golden Age Arcade Historian.
Oh yeah, we talk about him a lot.
Okay, fantastic. As recently as September, he's put in a great multi-part history, which isn't completely finished yet. He's on part two of the early genesis of the company that became Gremlin. And it's very interesting stuff.
Cool. All right. So I'm looking in Google Images, and there is a YouTube video that has looks like what somebody's playing what looks like the cocktail version of this game.
Is that the Todd Tuckey one?
It might be.
Yeah, I think I saw that video where I think he was demonstrating one that they had restored to sell or something.
We'll definitely include a link to that in the show notes, so you can at least take a look at what those games were like. But honestly, this is not a game where you have to have the cabinet to have a good time. It's simple. It's the left and right joystick and one button, and you're not really missing anything by not having the cabinet itself. So you don't need to rush right out and buy one.
Yeah, you can get all of your Carnival love right on a 13-inch screen. You don't need to crowd your garage or your attic with one of these bad boys. Although, if those cocktails are as rare as I think they are, I'd put them on the, you know, on the maybe.
Now, I just pulled up eBay, and there is a Sega Gremlin Carnival Arcade Circuit Board PCB board set, CPU and soundboards for $235 from Quarter Arcade Com. They've got 99.7% positive feedback, and they've got more than 4,000 transactions. So it looks like they're a reputable outfit. So if you actually do have an arcade cabinet that is one of these Sega VIC systems, Sega VIC dual systems, you can probably buy this board set and slide them in there and be on your way.
Yeah, you could have the guts for under $300. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
Mike, what are your criticisms about this title?
Well, I think, and this is less a criticism of the game probably than how jaded I am as an arcade game player at this point. There's not a lot really to the game itself beyond the depth of the scoring system. In other words, you're not, you know, you have the main screen, which is the shooting gallery, and you have the bonus shoot the bear and then repeat a little bit faster, you know, second verse, same as the first, a little bit louder, a little bit worse kind of a thing. And that's really all there is to it. The colors definitely are rudimentary. So again, this is not a criticism, I guess, of Sega itself, just that I played enough arcade games by now that I sort of need a little bit more than that to keep me interested for more than a few rounds. What about you?
I had a few. I'd prefer that they had coded like a negative or a descending or maybe a lower key kind of version of the bonus noise. To help you, like an audio cue that if you shot the target and there was a negative sign in front of it to alert you that, you know, you'd just been robbed of points or ammo. You know, later when the game gets, you know, really pretty busy, you don't always have the focus or the time to put your attention on that box, and you just sort of see the yellow in the periphery and take a shot at it sometimes. I found that to be a little aggravating. The difficulty ramps up incredibly quickly. Round two is about 10 times harder than round one, and as we've already discussed, you need to learn quickly that abundant ammunition is gone and you need to scratch for extra rounds. It'd be nice if maybe additional characters were added to the bonus racks instead of just the bear. Additional bonus racks are two bears, three bears, up to a maximum of four, I've heard, although unconfirmed, I've never seen that. It'd be nice if they added maybe a tiger or an elephant, you know, along with the bear, and, you know, a few more noises to accompany those creatures. The bland, empty, vacant black background is horrible.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
And a major, major complaint. I don't know if you were this unfortunate, but I'll share with the world, I guess. Okay. If you expend your very last round of ammunition and hit the very last target on the screen, game over. You need at least one round or more of ammo left to be granted to continue to the next stage, and I think that's really freaking cheap. You can't plus minus zero sum game over. mean, you have to have at least one extra bullet in the chamber.
Yeah, that didn't happen to me, and probably I would have been pretty frustrated had that occurred.
Yeah, I yelled a little. A lot, okay.
All right, so I guess it's that time of the week. Jeff, how'd you do?
On a happier note, I did look up the world record.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, out of morbid curiosity. A fellow named Fred Pastor, or Pastore, was granted the world record title in June 3rd, 2001. He had amassed a score of 386,750 points. I, however, got 15,940 points on round three.
Okay.
How'd you do, Mike?
I did considerably worse than that. The best I did was 4,120 points.
I smoked you.
You did. You suck. I hate you. You're fired.
I'll send you a teddy bear or a giant stuffed elephant or something.
I am not your date. No.
No. All right.
Yep. All right. I did terribly, but I had fun doing terrible. This is not a game that I have a lot of complaints about. I enjoyed it enough to recommend it if you haven't played it before. Like I said, I don't know that you're going to get a lot of replay value out of it, but for a few rounds, it's fun. You know, handful of quarters or so. Certainly not more than a couple of dollars, I guess. But for a 1980 game, it's fairly sophisticated. The sound is good. The ZX Spectrum graphics are kind of catchy at first, and it is tough. It's a hard game, but it will reward you if you spend the time to figure out how to play it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of machismo here. You know, the theme is kind of cutesy, and it might have caused, you know, more hardened arcade veterans to pass it by or to ignore it. But it's more challenging than Galaxian. I mean, some of those targets are infinitesimally narrow. And, I mean, the letters themselves in the bonus are barely wider than the shot that you fire. I mean, there's a lot of challenge here. And it's definitely fun for three or four credits at a time in small doses. I'd probably add it to my favorites folder.
Yeah, I found consistently that the bonus letters were what was left on the screen at the end of a round for me.
And that's a good way to play it. I mean, if you wait till the very last things to shoot, then you maximize your bonus. But I could never pull that off.
That's true, but you also burn through a lot of ammunition trying to get that that last U or S.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so normally at this point we would play next week's sound, and we're going to do that in just a moment, but I'm going to take this opportunity to remind everybody that we are entering into Novector. Yes, that's right, it's back for the third annual, fourth annual, whatever it is. We're going to be playing Vector games for the duration of November, so if you don't like Vector games, tune back in December, and if you do like them, well, we got a bunch coming, so here's what the next game sounds like. All right, Jeff. Well, I think that just about wraps up this week's extravaganza. Did you have a good time?
I did. This is a nice little trip down memory lane, but probably ready to sink into something with a little more meat to it.
Sure, sure. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and thank you, Jeff, for podcasting with me.
And thank you, Mike, for podcasting along with me.
And we'll see everybody next week.
Bye, everyone.